This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is growing by leaps and bounds. In the next 30 years, a million people are expected to move here and call the city home. But where are they all going to live? We are seeing a boom in the development of apartments and new money going into older neighborhoods for renovations and flips. It's not all good news. There are winners and losers here. The losers are the people who live on the margins. They're being pushed out of their rentals and go where? Do we as a community want to see all of this growth and development? How do we want to see it manifested? What policies should we adopt to steer positive growth, which maintains the city's culture and character? We're joined by Noel Pollo. He is Executive Director of the National Association for Latino Community Asset Builders. He's written in the Express News about the need for a clear housing policy that protects neighborhoods, current homeowners, and looks out for the low income. And we invite you into our conversation as we talk about this topic. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And you can email questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org. And Noel, welcome to The Source.
I appreciate the opportunity.
So we can describe the problem. We have been describing the problem forever here on the show. You know, we're always talking about this is happening. I want to know about what are some really concrete policies that San Antonio City Council could adopt that would do all of those things, protect our neighborhoods, our legacy neighborhoods, the character of the city, and look out for the low income. And so, but first, let's go ahead and describe the problem some, you know, so people will understand what we're talking about. What is motivating you to talk about this?
Yeah, so, you know, it's great to hear the opportunity to pivot from the problem to solutions, right? San Antonio is a city that has some real opportunity ahead of it. We're growing. The economy is strong. There are lots of cities in this country that would kill to be in our position, right? And so in some ways, it offers us the opportunity to really look at some of these challenges around our housing market with a lot of resources, right, with a lot of optimism looking towards the future. And so I think the challenge is that we, with this influx, you know, more than half of the households who live in the city earn under $50,000. That's who San Antonio is. I'm proud to have grown up in this city, and it's a working class town in many ways, and that's great. And so, but as that pressure comes in, lots of folks from California, lots of folks from Mexico, lots of folks from, there's a lot of push factors into this city, right? That is, we're seeing that move in the housing market, that pressure manifest in the housing market, right? And so we're seeing prices and rentals go up. We're seeing property taxes surge. I think this last go round, people looked at their property taxes and really grabbed their hearts, right? And so what are the implications for San Antonians? And this is not a discussion, I think, about, you know, sort of a small group of very low-income people. This is really about a very wide constituency in our city. You know, households that used to live very comfortably are now finding their housing costs really making them pull their belts and make some sacrifices. And if we don't do something as a city, as a metro region, that's going to become more and more dramatic. It's going to impact more and more people.
Look around the country. We can see cities that got it wrong. Cities like San Francisco, Portland, Washington, D.C., where basically if you're not making triple digits or even in higher triple digits, you can't afford to live in the city limits. And the pressure that it puts on the low income to get to jobs where they're not making a whole lot of money. I mean, you talk about why this is important, that we need to get this right.
You know, when we look at high-cost housing markets around the country, there's a real temptation to say, that's not San Antonio, right? We're a really different place. And yet, I think there's some really instructive lessons to be learned, right? So in San Francisco, you know, this is one of the most dramatic examples in the country. We saw a situation in which the city put a lot of money and effort into attracting the tech sector, right? And over a period of time, an already high-cost market really began to feel the squeeze because of, in the end, what were public incentives to drive economic development. Now, was that bad? No, I don't think economic development is bad by any means. But then the accompanying policy with that to anticipate the impact on who actually lived in San Francisco probably could have been better, right? Because now we see, my organization actually did a detailed study in the Mission District of San Francisco. And there what we learned is that if you are making your household is making $75,000 or less, you're leaving. That's the trend. And if you're making $100,000 or more, you're coming, right? And so that spot where you're just treading waters between $75,000 and $100,000, imagine that. A household has to make between $75,000 and $100,000 just to be on the edge of being able to stay where they are, right? And so, you know, in San Antonio, again, great opportunity in that we don't have that kind of dramatic pressure on us. But we should be able to learn from some of these lessons, that when we see some of those big public sector investments that are being made, we can anticipate what the impact of that will be on neighborhoods and people. And having an accompanying set of policies around major investments really is one way in which the city can begin to look sort of positively towards the future for all San Antonians, right? And not compromise economic development.
So when you're in San Francisco and you're making all of the money and you're living in the city proper, but you still need someone to put the schmear on the bagel for you and to make your coffee at the Starbucks. And these are people that are, where are they living in Oakland, someplace else across the bay, and they're having to commute an hour and a half just to get to that crummy job. That's not effective, and it's almost a apartheid of economic apartheid of sorts.
So the reality in San Francisco right now is that person wished they could live in Oakland, right? They're either living in highly overcrowded conditions in the city, or they're commuting hour and a half, 2 hours into the city. And in San Antonio, we're beginning to see some of these sorts of pressures, right? Where, and again, we're not talking about sort of the lowest of low income here. You're talking about a family that's making the average, right? Making about $50,000. And that first-time home buyer, that young family that wants to have a kid, right? When they look at the housing market, oftentimes, if they look towards the inner city, they see either high-cost housing or they see housing in need of real rehab. And that brings a set of concerns and worries, I think, for people, appropriately so, about taking on a project like that. And so then if you start to look outside the city, right, you really have to go a pretty long way now. And traffic in this city, you know, I don't remember traffic like this when I was growing up.
No, of course not. But just in the quality of life, you know, if you're able to find a nice little bungalow house in the inner city that you want to move into, it's still going to be pricey, and then it's still going to take a lot of work. But to live out on the outskirts, you're not going to get the quality of life that you were aspiring to.
More and more, when we think about affordability, we think about the index that takes into account the cost of your housing and the cost of your transportation as well, right? And that's incredibly relevant in a place like San Antonio that's just so geographically large, right? And so that's something that we have to be truly concerned about, is if we are pushing people further and further out, what is that impact on their costs, their quality of life, and ultimately, you know, what their choices are?
All right. Our conversation is open. We want the public to join us. The number is 210-614-8980. What kind of public policies should our city leaders be adopting in order to encourage a diversity of communities here as we see all of this growth and development? 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. What is the city's housing code policy? You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Does San Antonio have a clearly articulated housing policy? We're going to give you that answer in just a second. It should be shaping the future culture and character of the city. And it should also, you know, we need to allow, we're going to have all of this growth and development. That's going to happen one way or another. But how are we going to shape it so that all of the city benefits, the people who have been here for multiple generations, longtime residents, as well as these new influx of newcomers? So what is the vision? We invite you into our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. With me to talk about this is Noel Pollo. He's Executive Director of the National Association for Latino Community Asset Builders. And our phone lines are open, 210-614-8980. And Stephen has called in. And Stephen, hi. Welcome to The Source, and you're on the air.
How are you doing, sir?
Good.
Yeah, so I have a nonprofit organization on the east side of San Antonio called Guadalupe Gardens, and we are located on the New Braunfels corridor. It's at New Braunfels and I-35. My question is, currently there are two neighborhoods, Dignity Hill and the Harvard Place East Lawn, and these have been dilapidated and divested in for decades because essentially they were redlined in San Antonio. But now, as the inner city continues to grow, sort of y'all's subject, you see people coming in and revitalizing the neighborhood, investing in these old houses and these lots. And so a house that was $30,000 goes to maybe $250,000 or $200,000. My question is there policy in place right now to make sure that a portion of these houses are still reserved for the low-income families that have been here for decades? And secondly, where can I find stats and information to actively track how people are being displaced and the changing demographics of the neighborhood?
All right, Stephen, great question. Thank you for calling in, and good luck out there on the east side. I love that part of town. And so, Noel, what's up?
So it's great to hear from a nonprofit leader in the city, right, worried about a particular neighborhood, really thinking about the dynamics of a particular neighborhood. We have a really important infrastructure in this city in a number of nonprofit organizations that really can be a value add here. I'm not sure that there is a clear set of housing policies that sort of answer his question, right? But I think they're terribly important questions, because these neighborhoods that he described are a great example, a sort of microcosm of San Antonio, places that have needed investment. They're now beginning to get them. And so we can now, we've got the luxury of looking forward, of planning, of having optimism, right? And thinking about where will this neighborhood be in 10 years and investing now to make sure that we've got that balance, right? That we've got the mix of people who will continue to make that neighborhood vital. And I think things like land trusts, right, is one way of going about it. Using our nonprofit organizations, many of which have been around for decades in this city, investing in them in a new way. But also transparency about how the private market operates in these places. There are really great developers and rehab folks in the city. And then we've got the other side of the coin, right? And being able to see what's happening in the market and having a way of really having a much more transparent set of data out there would be a wonderful way for the public to invest, to make more data available so that someone like this, who's clearly sophisticated and interested in his neighborhood, really can look at that and make some decisions about what to do in his neighborhood.
So tracking is critical, having the data, knowing what's going on in the neighborhoods. We do not know how much a house is sold for. That information is not disclosed, but we can find out what the rents are if we make phone calls and inquire, you know, and that's a way to determine, holy cow, look what's happening here.
And in fact, there is a fair amount of public data out there, but it takes some effort and some money to put it together in a way that's digestible to sort of a more layman, an average person on the street. At NALCAB, the organization that I run, we actually go out and purchase private data sets, right, commercial data sets and multifamily data sets to have a better understanding. Not everybody can do that, right? But there is a fair amount of information that, with an investment of public resources, putting it on a public platform, really could be transformational, I think, to a lot of people in the city in understanding what's going on.
So the caller said that there are people who are able to pick up homes for $30,000 and then redevelop them and flip them for $250,000, or I'm not sure. Is that reasonable? Is that an exaggeration?
Yeah, I don't know if those are the right numbers in those neighborhoods, but we have in fact looked at numbers in Dignity Hill very specifically and seen a very rapid movement in that housing market. And what's interesting is when we look at that movement, that is not just a movement of prices. That's a movement of people. And so if you begin to track the number of people of color leaving that neighborhood, the number of people who are college educated coming into the neighborhood, you can begin to put your finger on some census data, right, from projection to projection in the census that tell you something about what's going on there. And in particular, when you see that data is very strongly described by race and ethnicity, you begin to understand some of the tensions that are going on, right? If everybody who looks like me is leaving my neighborhood and everybody who looks different is coming to it, you can anticipate in our public policy that there's going to be some challenge there. And so there's an opportunity then to invest in ways that take into account that real data, what's really going on.
Another caller, Michelle, is on the line. Michelle, hi. Welcome to The Source, and you're on the air.
Oh, wow. Well, I just want to say that my family and I are new to San Antonio. We moved here about a year ago with the military, and I was so surprised. You know, we've lived all over the country. I was so surprised at how hard it was to find affordable rental housing in a good school district in San Antonio, and I mean within, you know, 10 miles of Fort Sam. So I was wondering how the military population, you know, this is Military City, USA. I've been told how that population could affect housing availability and rental prices.
All right, Michelle, thank you for your call. And so, Noel.
This is a great example of too often, I think, when there's discussions of affordability, people get it in their heads that we're talking about some fringe, some very small, very low-income edge of the city, right? This is a mainstream concern for military folks coming to this city, for lots of people coming to the city, and people who have lived here for a long time. And where you live, you heard her concern, schools, right?
Right.
And in fact, we know there's tons of academic data now published that where you live, your zip code, defines so much about the outcomes for you and your children, right? And so she is rightfully concerned about these issues. And so we want to be thinking about where not only producing opportunities for affordable housing, and again, affordability, thinking across a pretty wide range of people in the city, but also where are we placing that affordability? And it really makes a difference that if we can give access to good schools, to healthcare resources, to jobs, for a range of people across the income spectrum, that's what ultimately keeps an economy strong and a place vibrant.
Another caller, Peter. And Peter, hi, welcome to The Source, and you're on the air.
Good afternoon. So I've got a couple issues. First of all, some of the data y'all are throwing around, like $50,000 for average income and low income people on the fringes of neighborhoods and things of that nature, that doesn't really make any sense to me. I mean, the same job I've done all my life, that I used to be able to walk in and get a job for $15-16 an hour, they want to pay you $8 and $9 an hour now, and they are being dead serious. And if you don't want to take that job, they've got plenty of other people who will jump into that. The other side of the coin is regentrification. As people come back into the downtown area, and I see all these lofts built and all these apartment complexes that are built off of Broadway and things of that nature, they're for astronomical rents, $1,300, $1,400, $1,500 for a one bedroom. I mean, you know, and for a city that has an aging population, and is so dependent upon a society that, you know, that seems to want to protect the aged people, it just doesn't make any sense to me the way rents are. It doesn't seem like there's any provisions made for people that are struggling right now. So, and I don't see it getting any better anytime soon. So my question is this: what is the city doing about that to protect rents, to make sure that things stay affordable? I mean, there's just no options, it seems, left in town.
Peter, what do you think the median income is then? If you say that 40 is too high,
I can only speak to my, you know, of the people I know and the circles I run in, and I think both people struggling with two parent family or even a one parent family or guys living with their girlfriends or whatever, I think $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 is the top they're going to see. I mean, I don't know what y'all are getting paid, but I mean, wages right now are horrible out there. I mean, when you look at a minimum wage in the $7 range, and you talk about people like Starbucks who are trying to get up to the $10 and $12 level, you look at employers like Walmart who are paying their employees $10 an hour, right. and these are non-skilled jobs. I mean, I went to UTSA though. I mean, you know, there's not people knocking down my door to try to give me money.
Okay, Peter, I got to let you go. Thank you for bringing up that point of view. And so, Noel.
I think the gentleman's drawing our attention to a big population in our city, right? Both by pointing to generally lower income seniors, right, is I think one area that he's focusing on. And then folks who are, you know, working class folks, right? The folks who make San Antonio hum every day, right? And so the question is, what happens to an economy when people at both ends of this sort of, you know, generally at an age spectrum, end up not having a place to live? And what happens is, businesses are going to have a hard time if working class folks don't have an opportunity to live affordably close to their jobs. And two, we're going to end up with a lot more senior homelessness, honestly, because we've got a challenge with seniors that the oftentimes you're looking at fixed incomes, right? And if there are not enough units, there are not enough units, right? People end up doubling up. They live with their families. And when those situations are challenging, that's where you end up with homelessness. And so this is a range of issues that we do have to be concerned about. I'm suggesting, however, that we do that these issues of affordability are across the whole spectrum.
Right. But beyond just kvetching on the radio, what can be done public policy-wise? What's happening, say, with the city budget?
Right. So if you if you're going to have a policy, that policy begins with your budget, right? The city budget has housing issues sort of tucked in a variety of places.
But is there a certain housing sort of an area in the budget?
There really isn't, right?
So other cities normally do. Other big cities, this is what they do.
Many, many large cities have a designated housing section of their budget. And then when you see what's in that section of the budget, you can begin to see how clear a housing policy there is there, right? And so I think as an organizing principle for our budget moving forward, it would make a real difference to begin with a section on housing as opposed to under economic development or somewhere else.
Okay, we heard that there was going to be something in this bond that was going to deal with public housing, but now you see it, now you don't. I don't see it.
Right. I think the opportunity for really significant impact on housing in the bond is not going to happen this time around. There may be some investment. There might be a pilot project. I don't know. But that's great. But I think that we really need to be thinking to move forward, thinking about our future city budgets and even towards the next bond. When we think about the housing market, we really are on those planning timelines.
But the next bond, I mean, that's a long time away. And this is a problem that is hitting San Antonio now. And the decisions that are being made now, policies adopted now, are going to shape how the city will look in the future for a long time to come. Noel Pollo is the executive director of the National Association for Latino Community Asset Builders. Noel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
The Source continues after this NPR news break. Stay with us.